Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm recording this podcast under my nom de plume because you're in the Doom Room. I'm Alex and I'm doomed.
Hachoom! You're in the Doom Room. I'm Justin and I'm doomed.
Oh boy, I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 2, Episode 2, Time Patrol. Brief bit of recap here before we get into it. If it's been a while since you've watched the episode, now that everybody has been embiggened, they're trying to figure out what's going on with Niles Calder. Turns out he traded his, maybe not immortality, but certainly long life to get everybody big and to help Dorothy hopefully live some sort of semblance of a normal life. In order to heal him is probably also the wrong word, but in order to get his life back, they end up tangling with the terrible Dr. Time, break open his head. It doesn't go well, and ultimately everybody's kind of annoyed as a team and not working together as a team. Meanwhile, Cyborg is off on his own side mission, meeting a cute lady, and Larry is off on his own side mission. Meeting with the dead body of his son and the living body of his other son. That's how I describe it.
Wow. Hell of a way to describe a funeral, but sure. I have a big meeting today with the dead body of my grandmother.
I'll tell you what, when I was writing down notes for the episode and his living son was like, hey, why don't you come by? I was like, what's that called? An after party? No, that's not an after party for a funeral. Oh, what's God. The word for
it's
that?
Apple TV's after party.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So there you go. That's a brief bit of recap for the episode. Pete, what happened at the beginning of the episode that you really want to focus on for the next 5 minutes?
Oh, great. Yes.
Oh, wow. This is a section now? This is a segment we're doing officially?
Yeah. Don't spell time that way. You know what I mean? People make it harder on us with the funky spellings. Yeah, I mean, Rita's right. You know what I mean? Once we saw the title of the episode, I was already worried because I was like, you know, usually the title is a fun, cute thing, but I was like, oh, this is a sign things are going to go horribly wrong.
Is that really the hill you want a DYE on?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No comment from you, Pete?
Okay.
Yep. None? Okay. All right.
All on board.
We'll just kind of roll on from there. Let's talk about the terrible Dr. Time stuff. I think we could jump to that because that's a super fun sequence. I love how hard
You love disco.
I love disco.
Right.
And I love how hard they're leaning into the comic book nature. Like, this is a character from the comic books. They do their own tweaks for the show. But just having a dude with a cartoon clock head is very fun.
I mean, the part where Cliff turns and goes, I'm sorry I made fun of your drawing, was just really great. I mean, that was really fun.
I mean, Cliff, a character that is basically a villain now in this show, it's nice that he still gets to have a little bit of fun here and there.
Talk about that a little bit more. Why do you think Cliff is a villain in the show now?
He's given over to his anger almost completely, and I understand he's mad at Niles with every good reason.
Did you just say that Cliff is a villain?
Man, I wondered what the delay
are you on a delay? Season. What's going on?
Go F yourself. I was hoping you were going to like make sense, but then I was like, no. I was giving you a chance, but this is awful. He is speaking for us, the people watching the show. He is commenting on things in a way that makes sense in an insane world.
Pete, Justin, you better be careful or Pete might K-Y-L-L you.
Oh, I know what that means. You wait, know what K-Y-L-L? Okay. I mean, my curiosity's piqued. What I'm saying is Cliff is so far gone in his anger that he's being awful to everyone. Like, he's beyond the pale, I think,
name
when it comes to
time
his, like,
he's bad. He's calling
awful
it
to
out.
Dorothy. He's awful to Dorothy, who is a child. Which is not nice.
No, she's like 300 years old. I don't know if she's a child. She's in the form of a child, maybe. but you know what I mean?
I would argue she's still pretty childlike.
I don't remember what age, she
age
said.
Age don't make a child, Pete. Look at, well, us in the mirror.
Damn it, you got me there.
Can I give sort of a mid-ground here between Pete, Cliff can do no wrong, and Justin, Cliff as villain, is he's definitely amped up this season, like very much so. They're leaning into not just the humor of how Brendan Fraser delivers cursing, which we talked about a couple of episodes back. He's really good at it. Like, that's not an easy
one
thing
to do. One of the best. I mean, I got to tip my hat. It's impressive.
Everything that he is doing, all of his lines in both of these episodes are delivered at a Screech level, like not Screech, the character from Saved by the Bell, but he is amped up right now. And I do think that ties into the revelation from last season that Niles caused his accident. Like, he'd been blaming himself. It was his fault. He was putting all of that hurt and pain on himself, and that was actually letting him grow as a person. So now that he knows it's actually Niles' fault, he's essentially regressed into being a petulant child. Like, I don't think it's a villain.
All right, take it easy with that.
He is,
take
though.
Take it easy with,
like,
that.
His interrogation. Off, okay, go ahead, Pete.
First off, he's a fucking brain in a tin can, so back the fuck up off of him, okay?
You're a brain in a flesh bag, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're a meat can.
We all are. Whatever. Go F yourself with that. The point is,
you are.
He's dealing with a lot, okay? And then he just found out the guy who's supposed to be helping has been fucking him the whole time. So, sorry, for a couple episodes, maybe he's screaming at some kids and maybe dealing with some things. You know, he's also going in there and, you know, helping and trying to save the day. And the only one who's talking to Jane at all. So, you know what I mean? Like, sorry if he's not up to your standards of how people should interact with each other.
He's not being nice to Jane either. He's making her feel worse every time he talks.
He's trying to help, though.
He's yelling at her all the time.
Yeah, I mean, not getting back to it. My standards of interacting with other human beings sort of like at the lowest bar start with don't yell at children all the time.
Oh, my God. You guys, so Cliff yelled at one child one time.
He is lashing out at Dorothy for a very obvious reason, which is he is mad at Niles for killing his daughter, which, fair.
Thank you.
So he is lashing out at Niles' daughter.
Can he have a couple episodes?
He's lashing out at Niles' daughter. Not fair, because not her fault. She did not control it. And
sure,
I'm sure,
but she's also
like,
packing I don't know how many monsters. And
you love those monsters, though, man. You thought the mirror monster was cute. Yep. Jane clearly doesn't think so.
You thought that was an adorable
joke telling spider.
That was hysterical. Armageddon, who? Come on.
Yeah, it's a great. That's a funny spider. That's a pretty funny spider.
Honestly, I love the juxtaposition of a giant scary spider and then also a sense of humor. I think that's fun.
Here's the thing. All spiders are funny. They're just not large enough to tell you jokes.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
That's right. Daddy long legs are very funny. They just can't get their mouths up to the mic.
Yeah. What's happening is, you know, you've heard the thing, you eat 8 spiders a year while you're sleeping, right? What they're actually doing is they're trying
to, fact.
They're
so
trying
it's gotta
to
be
get
true.
Up to your ear to whisper some jokes to you, and they keep falling in your mouth. It's very sad.
Whoa, 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 I just have a great joke for you. into your mouth.
Throats are so long.
I mean, were
spiders.
You guys excited to go back to the circus horror show? I mean, I was a little scared to go back in there.
You're all over the place, man.
Yeah. You're talking about the beginning of the episode? Pete likes to start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because that's how his notes are written. I love Snows and Toes. I've been a fan of Snows and Toes forever.
Like, so it's nice they got a little stage time in this one.
Abbott Costello,
right?
Suddy and Cher, Snows and Toes.
Wow. Ooh. Wow.
Great ranking.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of blew my mind a little bit.
I honestly think those are the Three Stooges
not in there.
Well, I did like.
I think those. Hey, wait, real quick. I think that's the opening lyrics to Rita and Runt from Animaniacs.
Snows and Toes? Like,
no, Abbott Costello. Sonny and Cher, they're the perfect pair. It's Rita and Runt. Anybody? Animaniacs from the 90s?
I don't remember Animaniacs, but I don't know what you're talking about. Are you talking about the opening theme song?
No, Rita and Runt were two characters. They had their own segment in Animaniacs.
Right, like the Godfathers. Like, I get it. You Pinky and the Brain. Good Feathers, right. And then
Rita and Runt, that was the dog and the cat, one of which was Bernadette Peters, right?
I believe you're, yes.
Okay, yeah. Great.
I do remember Bernadette friend. Peters. That's important.
Nice. See, we're all on the same page. Snows and toes. And we also got to see Candleman for the first time. And don't say that name three times.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Pete.
Candle
Make
Monster.
Make wish, Pete.
That is so scary.
Make wish, Pete.
I mean,
for those of you listening, Pete is scared right now. He literally leaned away from the mic because when Alex did that, because it's scary.
I'm going to have a good season of this podcast. I can feel it already. I really liked, to get back to the question that Pete asked, I did really like seeing this from the other perspective, because we also drive into the point that we were just talking about, that this is Niall's fault. He's trying to track down his daughter. And mind you, here he doesn't actually actively cause it. But things go wrong at the carnival because Niall is there, because the yoke jackalope sees him goes nuts.
Yeah.
So there's a missing period of time here. We don't know exactly whether Niall's recontacted his lady in the woods or anything like that. Probably not. But certainly something happened where the jackalope went from mother to daughter here, if we are to assume that Dorothy is, in fact, Niall's daughter, which seems the obvious conclusion.
Seems.
Yeah, seems to be the obvious conclusion. But the jackalope traveled there. The jackalope is clearly upset.
Yoked.
And that causes every yoked jackalope.
Come yoke-alope. On. That guy doesn't work out Jack-a-yoke. 8 hours a day for you to not point out that that jackalope is yoked, all right?
I'm really sorry. I apologize to the jackalope, and I apologize to our listening audience.
Thank you.
Pete, you're the jackalope's trainer, right? You're like the
oh,
Mickey
man, I wish.
To the jackalope's oh, Rocky.
That's a sweet gig.
Yeah.
In any case, I did like seeing this, and I'd like seeing the destruction there. Loved seeing the horrifying candle monster. The
love
design there
that?
Is great.
Oh, yeah, I did.
It's such so a nightmare.
It sort of was Peter Jackson-esque in some ways.
Oh,
it was cool.
I was kind of thinking of it to like a Miyazaki nightmare type thing, where it's like this monster that's dripping like hot lava everywhere, but it's candle wax. I mean, it's just a nightmare scenario.
Let me ask you guys a question, because this is something I touched on the last episode and don't really talk about here, but we get to see a bunch more of Dorothy's constructs. How do you think it compares with Jane's powers? Because Jane's powers obviously are internal, but they're also bringing out all these characters with different powers. Dorothy kind of does the same thing, but she's external versus internal, which I do think is the big difference there. Do you think there's any crossover?
Wait, do you think that we're going to get like a Voltron situation where Jane and Dorothy are going to combine and like they can like, I don't know. What are you suggesting there?
No one's suggesting that. A Voltron situation?
Yeah, where their powers combined can make different people.
Excuse me,
or
I actually
something.
Have to cut the podcast short. I have a Voltron situation.
Well, I want to get I want the three of us to get into a Voltron situation.
Just two arms and a torso.
That's right.
Wriggling on the ground.
What are you writing right now? I'm sort of writing a Voltron situational comedy. It's a Voltron sitcom. You know, they
it's a great idea.
Together. It's a good
first
idea.
Person, it's like Friends, but they all live in a robot.
Oh, wow.
Finally, something for them to do rather than sit around drinking coffee.
Here's my problem. You couldn't afford a robot that size in New York.
Wow.
That's good.
Oh, man.
I think one big revelation, we learned that Danny the Street is British.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the little posters and stuff should be read in a British accent.
Yeah,
it
all
changes
the O's
the whole
and
show.
U's instead of just O's, right?
Plus, technically, he's probably not Danny the Street. He's like Danny the Cop Off Alley or Danny the Nickel Knob or some kind of funny
Nickel Knob? That was...
Like whatever they call a street, like a flat versus an apartment.
I did really like, I thought this was really a neat textual thing of making him look different and old-timey. So seeing how he has actually changed with the times, I thought that was a really... cool, fun detail, and also just creates this, we've talked about this a lot, but just overall the tapestry of the show and the history of the show, because they're dealing with like 100, 150 years, something like that. There's so many things they can throw in there in terms of, in this case, Danny and Niall's relationships and how they work together. They can have Dorothy be there, and then maybe at some point in the future, we could see what it was like for Dorothy on Danny the Street.
That's
over the, course
the
of
thing
all this
that's
time.
Killing me is everybody's like, "Oh, we need Danny the Street back so we can shove her back in there." And I was like, "Can we talk to Dorothy a little bit about where she wants to go and like what her experience is?" Because it's a lot of people, you know, Niles is like, "I'm still here. I'm still here." And it's like, you guys are making all these decisions around Dorothy, and it's kind of very similar.
By talk to Dorothy, you mean scream at her and Punisher.
In the beginning, yeah, until you can get your feelings out, and then maybe you can calm down and have a conversation with somebody. But sometimes you got to scream for two episodes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Who are you referring to specifically? Any characters in particular? Or?
Yeah, I'm talking about Cliff.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that. Let's talk about some of the other characters then. We could keep on the folks who are on the terrible Dr. Time beat and talk about Jane. We touched on her a little bit, but she is still retreating inside of herself. She is warring with the other parts of her personality. And I do think there is a pretty big revelation here that they do a nice job of almost underplaying. And tell me if you guys interpret it differently, but Jane is not the main personality. Kay is the main personality.
Right. So he's the original.
Exactly.
She's the OG.
Which is something they hinted at very, very strongly the last season, but didn't outright state. Here we find out. And also we find out that Miranda may have been the first dominant personality, Jane
Miranda's
as the pilot.
Scary.
Yeah. So what do you think about all this? What, Justin,
anybody who like whisper talks in your ear is just the worst kind of scary person.
Mm. Yeah.
You what about the Yin Yang twins? Do you like it when they whisper, Pete?
Wow. What a ref, dude.
Thank you. It's all it jumbled up there somehow.
Oh, boy.
I like this.
Got out the memory of Yin Yang twins, and then I lost every single other part of English.
Your head's oozing purple from the giant hole in the back, Alex.
I mean, the boggle ref was really, that was fun. I mean, that was a great ref.
But getting back to the Jane revelation, Justin, again, this is your first time through here. Pete, I don't know how much you're mentored it, so we can turn to you in a second. But what was your take on that? How do you think this changes how we view Jane?
Well, I think it takes her out of sort of the power position where she's just numbing all of the other personalities. Like, I can't deal with this now. I'm in charge. It's fine.
Well, one of them's a nun with a chainsaw, so maybe numbing's a good idea.
Yeah. Numb the nun, I say. But I do think she's learning now that she might lose her position as the primary. Like, there's a chance that she has to resolve some of these issues because she will be ousted from control. A return of maybe Miranda comes out of the well, you know, like scary style.
Yeah.
Or there's another personality tries to get dominant. Maybe Kay comes back. So I think Jane is going to be a little bit more threatened. I also thought that the dunking and different personalities popping up may have led to some of the formulation of these personalities and sort of the nature of them sort of cycling through as her just trying to stop these traumatic things from happening.
And man, that actress who was playing the character, you know, getting dunked and the way she came up from the water different every time. So amazing. So spooky. That was really
crazy.
It's
a really cool sequence, and I appreciate the way this show is treating dissociative identity disorder. I think they have to do it in the modern era this way, but if you look at older comics, it's sort of like, what a cool power. You have all these personalities. In the more modern era, we understand more about what is going on mentally with people who have dissociative identity disorder. So to treat it that way, I think is very responsible and very interesting. And I also like the fact, again, that I think this is something we suspected strongly, but I don't believe was ever stated outright, is that Jane had these personalities before she had the powers. So it might be, again, an interesting thing to play at, and I'm forgetting a lot of the details here, so maybe they do hit on it. But the idea of if these personalities exist, did whatever happened to Jane then give each of those powers, or did they emerge with the powers, or how did that work?
Voltron situation?
Is it a Voltron situation? Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Big Voltron. Series of Voltron situations.
Big Voltron.
I think it's what's interesting is Jane is kind of like for us, the audience, the one we're rooting for because we've seen the most. So it's also like this thing of like, oh, man, I like Jane as a character. She seems to be level-headed enough to help all these people get on the same page. You know, having somebody else take over is a. You know, just another step backwards for this character, which is, you know, kind of a scary thing and something we definitely don't want if we're rooting for this team to succeed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point there, in particular because Jane is our character, right? Like, she's the one that we started with. So even if she's not the main personality, we as viewers we don't know Kay yet. We don't even really know Hammerhead as well as we know Jane. So she may not be the main personality, but she is the one we're rooting for. And that puts, I think, us as viewers of the show in a really interesting situation in terms of relating to what is going on with her.
Yeah. And it sounds like Miranda is maybe a little bit more able to lie, at least.
Miranda.
So Miranda. Mm-hmm.
She's such a Miranda. What are you? You're a Miranda. I feel like I'm more of a Penny Farthing. That's
wow. Yeah. But take the words right out of my mouth, Penny Farthing. You are 100% that.
Driver 8 over here saying that. All right, so why don't we talk about Rita? We touched on her earlier as well, but she's the third part of that team that goes to take out the terrible Dr. Time. Love the stuff that's happening with her as well. We talked about this over the past couple of episodes, but she is really not just stepping up as a leader, but also in terms of understanding.
Ripping heads off, like really contributing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But what was your take on here, her in this episode and everything going on with her, particularly because she has, like Jane, a huge regression point towards the end of the episode?
Well, I like that she's getting stuff done, and I was surprised she felt she's uncomfortable in this leadership role. So I think she was like, let me just rewind this because I think I messed up. And then she pays the price when Dr. Time really goes in hard, knows her real name, and makes her feel bad.
Well, I would beg to differ that she doesn't move backwards a little bit, because the window for Dorothy really kind of opens for her. And she's like teaching her how to cook and having a connection
making
there.
Some eggs.
So I'm very excited about Rita moving forward. Also, like, Rita was killing it in this episode with some great one-liners. You know, her, for the love of God, you know, when, you know, they're going, Jane and Dorothy are going back and forth about whether it's the truth or a lie. And she's like, for the love of God, what's true or isn't it a lie? You know, like, tell me what's going on. So I think Rita really had a lot of funny moments in this ep. And I'm Rita as a character has really already evolved a lot and is so much more fun right now.
Moving over to Cyborg, because as we mentioned earlier, he's on this whole side mission where he's trying to explore his PTSD and exactly what's going on with him. It's so interesting seeing him in this thing that's almost like a different drama at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like almost like a procedural or like some other like an NCIS style thing where he's like,
well, when you leave the manor, it's kind of like, you know, you're stepping into a completely different world. You know what
well,
I mean?
To the point that it's shot in a different style. Yeah. It's lit in a different way, which is kind of interesting. And I like it because it gives blanking on the name
like
of the
your
actor
tone there. I don't like your tone.
I think it's Jovian Wade is the name of the actor who plays Vic. It gives him a chance to flex his dramatic muscles. He finally gets to strike up a flirtation with this woman who clearly has some serious PTSD in her past as well. But I think it works really well, and I like seeing them connect here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do want it to get a little more Doom Patrol-y or like a little more surprising or original. It feels like the whole thing with the mugger, it's like he has to learn that the moral order he has as a superhero is not how the world actually works. But, I mean, we've seen that story so many times, so I want to hear the Doom Patrol version of that story.
Can I point out a line that she says that I thought was a good line but also totally doesn't hold up? After she convinces him – well, before she convinces him to not call the cops on this dude because she's like, right, he might just be a kid. He's just trying to do something. He didn't take anything. It's fine. She says nobody should be judged by the worst thing they ever did.
Right.
And I think mostly that's true. But immediately I was like, what about, like, you know, Hitler, for example? He did some bad stuff. I feel like we could probably judge him by the worst thing he did. Or,
well, I think I would consider what Hitler did a lot of bad things, not just one bad thing.
Well, okay, let's talk about the worst thing that Hitler did, and I feel like we can still judge him by that.
You talking about his painting, his art?
Yes,
there
super
it is.
Bad.
But let me say, I think this line feels a little too convenient.
The Hitler line is what that the line
nope,
you're talking
not
about?
Not talking about that line. That's a line we said, or you more particularly.
Yeah, never cross the Hitler line. Yeah, that's what I keep telling you that, Pete.
I keep remembering.
He was
so far, so good.
He was born across the Hitler line. I just mean this feels a little too convenient, and maybe this romance, there's a little with Ronnie. This may not be everything that we see.
Well, I got to say, as the rom-com expert here, I'm loving it, okay? You know, Vic being vulnerable, you know, getting a you know, different perspective on things. Also, you know, like, hey, Vic, you know, maybe don't call the cops, you know what I mean? So this is all great for Vic, but what's a little frustrating is, hey, Vic, what the fuck are you doing, bro? I thought you were going to deal with your dad shit and like try to figure out this whole thing that's in your brain that maybe isn't going on. And did you forget about the painting where the bad guys are just kind of frozen in time for a sec? You think that's going to last? And like, hey, there's a lot of things going on. And like, hey, man, I'm glad you are trying to deal with some stuff. And that's great. But like, things are on fire back here and we kind of need you.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about Larry before we start to wrap up here? Because there's, of course, a big storyline that's happening with him. I continue to love everything that's happening with Larry just because of the density of the emotion going on in these scenes.
Yeah.
Everything that's happening to him, from being at the funeral to just the overall weirdness that he's almost younger than his son at this point. Yeah. Is fascinating to watch. The scene in the barn where he discovers the letters that his son wrote to him
so
over the
sad.
Years. Oh my Very God. Upsetting. Killed me.
Plus, I love this. Is just looks like a different show as well. Like this, like autumn palette, him like walking down the. And then he steps into an episode of Reading Rainbow and the butterflies come and try to murder
never
him.
Never trust a butterfly. Everybody knows that.
I can fly twice as high. I'll just throw that out there.
Oh, wow.
That's from Animaniacs, right?
Yeah.
Rita in the brain, I think.
What's a little bit of like, it's hard to see like Vic and LT not helping the team right now because they could really use it. So it's like, part of me is like, oh, this is great. Larry's finally kind of dealing with this, going to the funeral, like kind of trying to reach out to his family. That's very exciting. But the problem is I can't enjoy it because it's like, hey, we could really use that light being back when they're fighting a disco hell person. So like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what can we do here? Can we either like let Larry go to the funeral and then when he gets back, we all go on an adventure, or like what's going on? Because right now the timing of everything is kind of,
well, I mean, they've done this before, right? Like they've sent everybody off on their own missions. In season one, it was much more about being paired than being individual, which is probably why it feels different. But given the first season and how good that was, I'm confident in this show. Again, I'll just emphasize, I've seen the episodes. I don't remember the specific thrust of the plot, but I do think we're going to see things crisscross and ultimately come together because that's just what the show does, you know?
Exactly.
Yes. Anything else we want to call about the episode?
Two quick things. I love Doris Day IKEA calling Darling, the construct that Pete loves so much with the light up eyes. Thought that was fun. Then Cliff really laying into the idea that before you get put into a giant metal body, make sure you fuck a watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he was just kind of, you know, that was a hilarious just thing to throw in there. You know what I mean?
It seems like something he was like, if it's on your list,
it seems like he really misses it.
That's what I'm saying. To list that in that moment, along with like other like hug your kids, and then he's like, fuck a watermelon. That feels like really high up there on the priority list.
Yeah, and a little piece of advice to anybody listening to the podcast, warm up the watermelon first.
Oh, come on, man. Oh, dude.
Yeah, Alex, you bought a fruit warmer, right? For all the different fruit that you plan on fucking.
Absolutely. You got to have an oven that's large enough. And the important part is you don't warm it too long because then it gets cooked. That's not what you're looking for. You're just looking for a nice, even warmth throughout the whole melon. It's all melons.
Now I know your insult, go fuck a hot watermelon. Now I know what that means. It's like, oh, man. Nasty.
No, it's a compliment.
I, things I wanted to point out.
Have a nice day. It's basically the same thing.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. When Cliff loses it and is like, no more bad girls, and just kind of like smashes the record player, that was just, that's fun. That's fun stuff.
A couple of things that I thought that I noted down were interesting. I really liked Cliff's line, yeah, I bet you cried for weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Very fun. And also, we didn't really talk about this, but just the talisman was the thing keeping him alive. So it'll be interesting to see as they potentially continue to look for things to try to keep him alive. Also, he's 139 years old, which was kind of wild. The whole argument about changing his diapers. Great digression there. Very, very fun.
I loved Cliff's anger for making him relive the Peking noodle. That was fun.
Yeah. I think my favorite exchange in the whole thing is when Cliff is refusing to go visit the terrible Dr. Time. And then Niall says, okay, that's fine. Don't do it. And then Cliff says,
I agree with
him. Is this reverse psychology? Niall says no. And he says, then fuck it. I'm in.
Yeah. Very funny.
Made me laugh out loud.
Also, like when Rita, like they first get there and Rita's like, remember the chief says, he's like, oh, go fuck the chief. Yeah. You know, like just so funny.
There's also one other thing at the end of the episode that we touched on a little bit, but is so harsh. We get to see Niall say Clara was deemed expendable, which is messed up. Like, clearly he's uncomfortable about it, and I know I'm giving him a lot of credit here, but it's still such a harsh, horrible thing to say.
Yeah, he put his daughter's future above Cliff's daughter's future.
Yeah, and then they kind of played that part where he's like, when pushed into a corner, I will do anything for my daughter. Which, congratulations on being a dad, I guess.
And last but not least, we do get to see Larry be overtaken by a cloud of butterflies at the end there. Other than being taken to see LeVar Burton, what do you think is going on with him?
It's a trap. It's got to be a Mr. Nobody trap or something. I don't know why you would calmly sit there and let butterflies kind of trap you like that. I mean, you got
to
fight.
This feels like a new character or maybe someone or something that can sort of sense the negative spirit and is chasing that, is my guess.
I guess we'll have to see what happens. Before we wrap up, though, who is most doomed this episode? Justin, who's most doomed?
I mean, Niles has really fallen off, but I think I said it earlier. Cliff is becoming a villain, and he needs to help himself before he goes too far.
Oh.
Man, I'm going to give it up for Larry being most doomed in this episode. We just talked about this, but whatever's going on with the butterflies probably isn't a good thing. I don't know if you guys have ever been to one of those butterfly exhibits, like a zoo or a museum. It's hot in there. It is super hot and very uncomfortable, and you think it's going to be nice to look at all these butterflies, but it's not a fun time.
He's going to end up in Capistrano. Or wherever they end up.
I think that's Swallows. Isn't that Swallows?
I think that's Swallows, yeah.
Okay,
but Pete, somewhere down there.
Yeah, around the California coast somewhere. Pete, who's most doomed?
Jane is most doomed. It looks like Miranda's going to be taking over. I'm worried about what's happening moving forward.
Listen, everybody's in a really bad place. And if you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And now before we wrap up here, let's get a piece of advice spelled A-D-V-Y-C-E.
Yes.
Well, you ruin it when you do that kind of setup. So my advice is don't spell things harder than they need to be. You know, life is already hard enough.
Wow. That's true.
One for one, Pete.